Hello and welcome to the Kyogo Furuhashi Weekly. I'm your host this week, Louis McCaffrey, and I'm joined by the handsome Christopher Somani. How are you, Christopher?
Terrific, Louis. Dying to get into this, being positive for once, so really looking forward to it.
You sound really upbeat there.
I'm not okay. Saying, mate, I'll get you later, don't worry.
We're also joined by the wonderful, making his debut. You know, you made a debut last week. This is your real debut. This is the big one, you know. This is your chance to shine. It's, of course, Lorenzo Pacitti. How are you?
Good. I'm honoured to be here. It's to be on the weekly. You can't beat these Tuesday nights under the floodlights on Zoom. It's the big show.
It's a big show. And we're also joined by the dashing Callum Gordon.
How you doing? Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here. Guys, we're going to be positive. We're going to be super upbeat. Despite any news that might have broken this afternoon, which we'll maybe get to later on, we finally have a chance to kind of wax lyrical about Celtic, finally. Obviously, at the weekend, I missed the weekly last week. So, Manny, how was it? Were you impressed?
The weekly was great last week. It was refreshing, you know, to have some new blood on it. You know, don't want you getting steel. I know you were away sunning yourself, but no, it was good. Fairly positive as well, despite the fact we hadn't had Sunday's epiphany.
Yeah, no, I thoroughly enjoyed it. It was a great listen. And yeah, thanks for Gal stepping in. Listen, we're going to get to it because like we're all excited, I would hope, to talk about this game. I certainly am anyway. Celtic 6, Dundee 0. Kyogo Furuhashi getting a hat-trick. There is so much, I think, to talk about in this game. And it's great to finally have the chance to just talk about matters on the field. We'll maybe come to matters off it later on, but it's good to kind of have so many talking points within the game itself. So, Manny, I'll start with you. Overall thoughts on what we saw on Sunday? Now we're a few days away. Are you still as high as you were, or are you starting to come back down to earth?
I'm probably still as high as I was. With caveats, yeah, I think you always need to do that. There has to be. You can't just assume that that's it and we've clicked. But my God, I've not enjoyed a Celtic game like that for a long, long time. I mean, it was quite emotional being back in the stadium. Okay, I was back in the ground for the West Ham game, but that doesn't really count. Just going back in itself was good. And then after maybe 10 or so minutes, you could see that this was different. You could see that what Postecoglou's talked about, what we've read about, what his teams try and do, was beginning to show, it was beginning to take shape. And that was just unbelievable. I mean, I know we'll break the game down, but from start to finish to where the game ended and Cal Mac brought all the players in for the huddle and Ange came onto the pitch and was waving at the crowd, it was truly emotional. And well, hopefully that's the start of something special. I mean, I'm probably saying the same things that everybody's thinking, but that felt like we'd came home and it felt like this is the dawn of a new era.
Yeah, Lorenzo, did it feel like the start of something for you? Can you see us kind of, you know, it'd be difficult to maintain those levels, but do you think that's the aim now?
It's the kind of performance that you are allowed to be completely over the top excited about, and it's tough to even think about the word caveat. And it will feel, I think, in time, if all goes even remotely as planned, it will feel like a momentous day. The same way, maybe even more so than people talk about, you know, we talked about when we played Hearts first game of the season, we kind of wanted a Rodgers-esque start and that we maybe have a scrappy game and we get that late goal and it kicks something off. But the way Postecoglou talks, where he wants to play, attack, entertain everyone off their seats, maybe this was better. You know, if we had another lull at the beginning of the season, but then we go out and hammer somebody like we haven't hammered somebody in so long, and you forget just how long it's been since you've had a day at Parkhead, where everything is just party atmosphere, goal after goal, and yeah, could easily have been 10.
Yeah, definitely. I think one of the main things that impressed me so much and I was so happy to see was that we performed for 90 minutes. You know, we didn't have a good first half, then kind of drift away the second half. We seemed to be on it, desperate to get another goal, which, Callum, feeds into what Postecoglou has been trying to get across to the players. Obviously, we saw that clip on YouTube and, you know, he was saying that we don't rest to the game's over and things like that. I think that was probably the first time that we've really seen that in terms of how the team played.
Yeah, very much so. I think up until now, you've maybe seen it in flashes or small moments or moves which have almost came to fruition but haven't quite came off on on Sunday, it felt like almost everything we were doing was just clicking perfectly. Passes were falling in the right places, you know, everything with the exception of a few misses from Furuhashi, and he more than made up for it. Everything just clicked, and it was a great weekend. It was a great feeling, obviously. Great result on the Saturday, and you know, it gives you a chance. You think going into it on the Sunday, we've got a chance to really lay down a marker here, because I think a lot of people, including Celtic fans, wrote us off after the opening day of the season, and it was just great to get a bit of positivity back around the place. It was great to see fans back in the stadium. And you know, if Ange can serve up even 75-80% of what we saw on Saturday throughout the majority of the season, you know, performance wise, I think most of us will be pretty happy.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing how you know, how much things can change within a matter of a week or so, you know, especially one good result. Now, Samani, over the years, we've been doing this for a while. You know, if we had a game like this and I came out and said, we're the greatest, we're going to win this, we're going to, you'd slap me down as soon as we got on the weekly. And I don't think that's going to happen. There might even be the other way around tonight. But before we get to individuals, we're obviously going to start with Furuhashi, but I thought we'd just quickly go through the team. We started off with Joe Hart and goals. Obviously, Joe Hart, his arrival and McCarthy's arrival was spoken about last week on the weekly. Joe Hart started, Anthony Ralston, right back, Welsh, Starfelt, Taylor, Turnbull, McGregor, Rogic, which was a surprise, I think, Tam being in there, and then Abada, Furuhashi and Ryan Christie on the left. So Manny, let's talk about Furuhashi. I mean, We've had some very special players for different reasons, you know, different types of players over the years that have that kind of star quality. Over the last few years, we've had the likes of Moussa Dembele, who was obviously a cut above, and we profited from that. Then we got Eddie in to replace him, and he's obviously a very talented individual. How special, and I know it's just, you know, a small sample size, as they would say on the analysis podcast, but how special do you think Furuhashi could be if he continues the way he's going?
He could be an all-time great for us. I mean, I can't believe I've just said that after three games, you know, but you can just tell. I mean, you don't have to be, you know, a football specialist or a really keen eye to know that when you see him, he's a football player. His movement, his work rate when he was tracking people down and, you know, defending from the front that Postecoglou talks about, his finishing, his head didn't go down when he missed a chance. You know, everything about the way he kind of conducts himself in the park tells you that he's got all the tools to be a great for us. Now, you know, caveats, as I say, it might, you know, that's not guaranteed. This doesn't always happen. It takes hard work as well as talent, but he looks as if he's got the work rate, he's got the desire. He, even at the end of the game, you know, when he was taking the plaudits, he, you know, was soaking up the adulation, and you could tell he was kind of just humbled for the response he got with the standing ovation. Everything about him just screams that you've got what it takes to be brilliant for us. You've got the right attitude, and he strikes me as the sort of player that is made to come to Celtic. We cry out for guys who are special for us. We laud them and we big them up. For me, it could be him this season. He's just tremendously exciting. There was a wee concern, obviously, when he signed, that coming straight to Europe, especially Scotland, and, you know, our culture and the weather and all that, straight from Japan, you know, it might take him time to adjust, but doesn't look like that right away.
He made it look effortless. Like, I felt like watching him, he just looked like he had unlimited amounts of energy and was so deft in his touch. And, you know, that 1-2 he played with Tam before he scored the first goal, I mean, that was stunning. The two of them, don't get me wrong, I know that Tam's not going to be playing European games necessarily or possibly starting against the better teams in the league, but see, games like that, I mean, if we can get the two of them playing, and obviously we're going to talk about Ryan Christie as well, but he just seemed to be already playing at a different level to other people around him. Do you think is that fair, Lorenzo?
Yeah, I get the feeling from Furuhashi, from the way he holds himself, from the reaction we've had from even the Japanese media and Japanese fans and the hype Celtic fans have built around him, it feels like we've just signed a £30 million player. Like, it feels like we're not waiting on, you know, a Dembele is a star for us, but a Dembele is a guy we sign, he proves himself to be great, and over a few seasons works his way up to a star for Celtic, and he's got a certain valuation. Furuhashi just has this vibe about him that we've just signed, you know, a star from another league, in a league that clearly has been underrated by the media and by a lot of Celtic fans for how Furuhashi's so quickly taken to the SPL. And as you say, everything he did was perfect. And I think even his defensive duels, I think he dived in a bunch of tackles and he won almost all of them. And we talk about, you know, the size of him and maybe he's too lightweight and the kind of obvious things people say, but everything he does just seems to be filled with class, whether that's him sitting in the stands applauding the fans or hugging every member of the team. I don't even know how much English he speaks, but it seemed like he was getting on with every member of that team and they all love him, and he's just that player that you want to play with and you want to play for. And yeah, he feels like those marquee signings we've made in the past, but without the big fee necessarily, and without the kind of the backstory and the pressure of already playing like a Robbie Keane or whatever, who comes up here and we all queue, everyone stands outside the ground, and then he's got that weight on him. He just feels like Furuhashi, he's here to play football and he knows how good he is. And he was not shy, you know, in trying flicks and running off players and demanding the ball. And we talk about, like, you know, to put him in ahead of Edward, I know Edward's not been playing great and he's essentially on his way out, but it's still a big call to take Edward out of that team when he's fit and put Furuhashi down the middle and lay that marker down and say, he's a striker for me. This is my striker, not Edward. But Furuhashi looks like he could play anywhere in that park and be the best player on it.
Yeah. And Callum, the kind of scary thing is, and do you know what? We are getting ahead of ourselves, but fuck it. We've had a fucking miserable year and a half. We might as well enjoy it. Like, you have to think, see, once he gets fully up to speed with his teammates. I mean, he's been there a very short space of time. He looked as if the relationships that he had, certainly with Christie, it was like telepathic already. But you would imagine that once he establishes himself more within the group, we're going to see the fruits of that further down the line as well.
Yeah, definitely. I thought he was a complete breath of fresh air. Just his movement, his touch, the way he drags defenders about and then immediately leaps to get in behind them. It was, you know, Odson Edwards been a great player for Celtic, but in the recent months has looked very predictable, and Furuhashi seems anything but. And I don't know if that's just the novelty of it, but, you know, he was, you know, his movements in the park, and you could tell that the Dundee defence never got a moment's peace. So yeah, it's just great to honestly see a Celtic signing come in the door and immediately hit the ground running, because for so long it's almost became a joke that the amount of players we sign and you won't see them again for 6 months, if at all. Even David Turnbull, you know, one of the standout players of last season, came in and we didn't see him until October, November time, really. So you'd like to think that if he continues on this trajectory, we've got a real, real player on our hands. But then again, I thought that after about 20 minutes of Dirk Berichter, so just to temper the expectation a little bit. But yeah, you can tell he's got real quality and real class about him. And if we can keep him fit and keep, you know, providing him with enough chances, because I do think he'll miss chances. I think that's been said in a few podcasts already. But he gets himself into enough positions to continually pop up. And if he does that, if, you know, eventually he'll score a few of them. As was shown at the weekend, got a hat-trick, but, you know, could have had five or six comfortably.
Yeah, what I know this maybe sounds a bit mental, but one of the things that I kind of thought of or had in my head, that see watching him, and Abada as well, actually, which is another player we're going to come on to later, for some reason, I didn't have any worry that they were going to get injured. You know, sometimes you watch players and you think, fuck, if a bad tackle goes in, you think he's going to be broken, he's going to be out for a week. The two of them, I thought that about during the game, but he looks like he's so smart and intelligent that he can kind of basically kind of predict what's going to happen before it happens and move out the way. He just looks like he's playing on a different mental level as well as kind of physical. But Somani, in the great words of John Collins, passing, moving, tempo. This game different, didn't it?
It did. And it's that philosophy of Postecoglou where he says, don't take too many touches on the ball, try and move it forward. And you could see that. I mean, the first real genuine sign of it was the chance that Furuhashi missed before he scored. the one where he played the 1-2, was it Tam or was it Abada? I can't remember.
Oh, it was Tam. It was Tam.
So he played that back in, and he probably should have put that one away, if we're being honest. But you could see that. You could see at that point that what he's kind of preached was starting to come to fruition. And from that moment on, it just continued. And we've seen, you know, touches around the box, you know, wee layoffs, moving it quickly. Don't dwell on the ball. You know, even under the best football we played under Rodgers, you know, a lot of the time we maybe held on to the ball. Certainly as his tenure moved on, we held on to the ball too much. Guys like Strachan, going back, I know we'll talk about that tit later on, and Lennon, too much dwelling on the ball, not on Sunday. It was just, as you say, John Collins, passing tempo, quick movement. And that's what he said he's going to do. You know, we'd been warned previously that it might take a few months to start kind of coming to fruition. And don't get me wrong, you know, it was Dundee we were playing, so it might not click completely in every game, but that's what he's promised, and you believe him. You believe that we're going to deliver that now in the games that we play going forward. That's the thing. That made me believe more. It's all very well talking about it, but if we've got players buying into it and starting to show it in the pitch, you're starting to think this could be special.
I mean, Ange essentially turned up, you know, like, with a big hamper, like he was at a Scottish dance floor at a wedding, you know what I mean, with a big box of flip-flops, and just started handing them out. There was so many players here that we'd written off and said, nah, shite. And we're all eating our words, you know. Ryan Christie, let's come to him. He was in the blender. He was a figure of fun. He was hated on probably more than any other player, certainly from this podcast and the wider support. He's now out of the blender and in the fridge. Something like that. I don't know where to go with that. But how impressed were you with Christie, Lorenzo? And have we now got very quickly to the point where instead of forcing him out the door, we're now kind of begging him to stay?
I think Celtic love doing things on the cheap, and how bad Christie was and the reaction of the supporters last year made them know that they can delay giving him a contract or offer him less money or the same money or whatever, because if he ends up leaving, he ends up leaving, and the fans will be happy. Now, you know, he's got all the cards. He can kind of demand what he wants because he's been a revelation under Ange, and he's, you know, he's an Ange player. I think Boud said in the deep dive that Christie was a guy who Ange would look to really kick on with. And as he's talked about, the Ange way of moving the ball and not thinking about it too much is what Christie would get stuck in possession in the middle of the park, and that's when he'd end up hitting shots from 30 yards because he'd have nowhere to go because he'd have taken two or three touches and been crowded out. I think Christie talked about Ange's importance. He puts on good decisions in the final third and being efficient in the final third and actually taking chances. So it's weird to see Ange teams having, I mean, we have 70-odd% possession some of these games recently with Ange, but we're hitting like 30 shots, 20 plus shots, but they're not going, you know, they're not wasted 40 yards over the bar because we've run out of ideas. They are products of good moves and moves that Christie's been on the end of. And yeah, for me, we just need to give him whatever he wants. I mean, we make promises we don't keep to 90% of our good players, so I don't mind telling him, you know, tell him he can leave next year a Premier League team because he fits Ange. He's going to be key in winning this league back. So as long as we can get him up for another year, signed up, if he needs to move on this summer, great. But I think this is one of the most important things we can do this summer as a board.
Callum, do you think it's too far gone? Do you think he's just desperate for a move, or do you think we can convince him? I mean, I don't know if it is all about money. I mean, possibly is, but I mean, if he's got ambitions to go play in England, I don't really know what we do.
I'm sure Ryan Christie probably does have ambitions to go play in England, but it might not be an ambition to go play for a Burnley or a team of that ilk. You know, I'm sure Ryan Christie's seen, but you know, numerous of his international teammates have done at a decent level down there, Southampton or Arsenal or so on, and probably fancies a bit of that himself either now or at some point in his career. But based off his form of last season and, you know, a pretty disappointing Euros from him as well, there doesn't look to be a big long list of clubs that are after him. So I think it actually might suit both parties if we, you know, if there's a, you know, he signs a new contract but there's an agreement if a decent offer comes in, or even put a release clause in his contract for a certain amount, and if, you know, a decent club comes in and activates that next season, then he can go. With our best wishes. But right now, I don't see the calibre of club that he probably want to move to will be coming in for him. And he looks absolutely perfect for this system. I also think that we would necessarily replace him particularly well. You know, Christie in the final 6 months of his contract, you're lucky if you're getting much money at all, maybe a couple of million at best. I can't imagine that we're going to find a player of Ryan Quick, Christie's quality and energy and all those great things that we knew he could bring to a side. I think that was what frustrated us last year, is that we'd seen him be good before. We knew that, you know, there was more to Ryan Christie than a player that just seemed to take pot shots from 40 yards all the time. And we're seeing that player again this season. So to me, it's an absolute no-brainer. If you need to push the boat out a wee bit on wages for him to stay for another season or maybe two, then that's fine, because I don't see us necessarily replacing Ryan Christie in the transfer market on a budget of 2 or 3 million at best.
So, Manny, you changed your mind on him?
I'd like Christie to stay, but I'm going to quote Ange, see if this doesn't convince him to stay. Away you go. One thing I've learned from last season is I do not want players at this club who don't want to be here, especially players who aren't going to buy in or to the way that we're playing just now. I mean, quite quickly, I mean, if we're going back, Postecoglou, the way Postecoglou was hired is still a disgrace, I'd say, because I think with what happened with how, see the idea that we'd planned him out and all that, so the board, you know, the way that they hired him, I still think's a joke, but they might have stumbled on a gem. They really might have. And for me, at the moment, the most important thing is the manager, and see the personnel they need to buy in and work with him. So see if Christie wants to stay and he wants to play for Ange under the way he wants to play football. Yeah, of course you would, on the basis of what we've seen so far. See if there's a small doubt in his mind. Away you go. And I totally appreciate what Callum's saying about who or how we might replace him. But, you know, we need to learn the lesson of last season. You need to want to be here.
Yeah, absolutely. The pass for the third Furuhashi goal, that was exquisite. I mean, I don't know if there's anybody else that could do that. Tam has done it in the past, I would say would be the closest. I don't even know if Cal McGregor would play that pass.
Turnbull. I thought it was Turnbull at the game on Sunday, so I'm going to say Turnbull. I was far away.
Turnbull seemed to play. Yeah, that's what I was going to say. He seems to play the same ball, you know, that kind of high pitch up, you know, up behind the defender.
The sand wedge.
Aye, the old sand wedge. He'd done that quite a lot, Turnbull, but. No, it was an incredible pass and possibly his best performance. Like, definitely up there with one of his most dominant performances, I think, for Celtic, which was great to see. But I totally agree with you, Samani. I think I've been thinking about this with Furuhashi. I'm like, I can't get too attached. I can't get fucking emotional when somebody comes and gives us like 2 bob for him next year and we say aye and take the money. You know what I mean?
The tattoo cancelled then, mate, aye.
Yeah, I did actually go on the website to see about getting the new home top with Kyogo in the back. It was 80 sheets. I mean, fucking hell.
Come on.
Aye. To China we go. Lorenzo, Leila Abada, talk us through this young man. 19.
I love him. I love Abada. I think he's so hard-nosed for a winger that's as tricky as he is. He just seems like he's, when you talked about when you see Kyogo and Abada getting tackled and they don't look like they're going to get injured, Abada looks like he might injure people when he runs at them. He's so direct, which is what you want in a Celtic winger as well. And we're going to dominate these games so much. You want somebody that when they pick the ball up in the final third and they've got a guy one-on-one, they just go for him. They go by him. And then his crossing is great. It really is, because again...
See that cross for the first goal. Man, how many times have you seen fucking Forrest just balloon that over the bar? You know what I mean? He looks dead composed that way.
It's been a few now as well, a few different games where every time he gets, and when he gets a sniff to put a ball in, he puts it in, he doesn't dummy it and come back on his left and then dummy it and come back. And he's, I don't know how two-footed he is, because we've seen him, you know, slice a few shots, but he's very willing to take things on. He takes the best option. When he's in the wing, he takes what the defender's giving him and beats him, because he can beat him for a pace. And he loves to shoot. He's got an eye for goal. He's so keen to impress. Even just, you know, he's just arrived and he's demanding a penalty off Edward. For me, personally, I like there to be a penalty taker. No arguments about it. You know, the penalty taker takes the penalties. But for a 19-year-old to be kicking off like that, not kicking off, but definitely being moody in a 6-0 game about not getting to take his penalty shows his hunger.
I thought it was brilliant. I was lip reading him. He says, "You've no fucking kicked your arse in 12 months. You fucked up. Give me a ball." But no, he's brilliant. I see the celebration for the first goal when Kyogo and him ended up on top of each other.
He's got a great relationship with Kyogo, which again, they're going to be playing next to each other, and Kyogo's our new star. So if this 19-year-old guy is getting on so well with our new star, they're both two new players, it's a great kind of double signing this summer.
Kyogo and Abada is a better bromance than KT and Paddy. That's
100%.
Don't you shake your head.
Calm down, son. Calm down. Recency bias, that's what that is.
I predict Abada to have a starring role in the Christmas advert. That's my prediction.
Oh. Wasn't thinking that far ahead, but now you mention it, it's quite interesting. Callum, do you think he'll keep his place ahead of Forrest? I mean, we've seen Forrest, obviously, he came on at the weekend and he's kind of been fed back in slowly after being out. I mean, James Forrest is stalwart at the club at this point. Can you see Abada keeping him out for long, or is there going to come a point where you think he's only 19, he can't play every game, he maybe sits a few out?
I think that point will probably come. I mean, I remember sitting with my mate in the pub after the Hearts game the other week, and we both absolutely slated the Abada for having no end product. So I'm glad he's made an arse of me very quickly. I do think his end product is erratic. I think some games it looks like everything he hits is going to go in, or every cross he puts in is going to be put into a good area, and then other games it looks a bit ropey. But you get that with a young player. He is young and exciting. I think with Forrest, you've got that sort of degree of consistency that you very much know what you're getting from him on a week-to-week basis. And James Forrest, which has probably been forgotten about due to how long he's been out injured, but his contribution in terms of goals and assists over the past 4 or 5 years is, you know, right up there. And it's been integral to our success in recent years. So I wouldn't be writing off Forrest just yet, but I'm definitely very excited by Abada. And I think that's a... We were crying out for wingers all last season. I think we've really addressed that now, at least on the right-hand side. That looks really, really strong, especially if you've also got Weed and Belly to potentially come back. And then on the left, you've got Christie, possibly Furuhashi if he moves out there. And then Mikey Johnson if he ever gets fit. So it's less of those two, you know, those two positions are less of a problem position now thanks to that. And I wasn't quite expecting that from Abada when he first came in. I thought this is another development project that we might see, you know, might bear fruit in a season or two's time. But he has pretty much really hit the ground running. And despite, you know, the occasional erratic moment or erratic performance, you know, for a 19-year-old coming into a new club in a new country, I think he's done really, really well.
So, manager, what, do you issue an apology to Dudu Dahan?
No. Can't apologise to Dudu. We'll just get more players off him of questionable calibre. What Callum said at the start, I would tend to agree. I was fairly critical of him in the reaction after the first leg of the Jablonets game. And I think he's a work in progress. There's clearly talent there. But he isn't going to start every game. James Forrest absolutely has a position to play there. But I think what you're going to see is, I think Sunday was an example of how much of a squad game this is going to be. We can't play the same 11 players at that tempo every week. Bringing guys like Rogic in for certain games, you know, we've got, you know, Turnbull will drop out, you know, and you can bring McCarthy in, hopefully, and Abada out for Forrest. I think what you're going to see is you're going to see a lot of the squad being trusted more and played in certain games, because it's like, if we're going to play at that tempo, it's like Bielsa's Leeds. When he first took over, they played a phenomenal football up until Christmas, January, and then the fatigue set in. If you want to continue in that vein for an entire season, you need a wide range of players to do that. So Abada, for me, I wasn't sure how much he would contribute. After Sunday, I'm thinking definitely you can, and obviously he's got in the score sheet for us a couple of times now. I'm thinking, yes, you can, but 100% don't write off James Forrest. I mean, if you ask me right now, who did I want to play, Ibrox, Abada, or Forrest, I'd pick Forrest.
Well, one thing you said there about making kind of best use of the squad kind of feeds nicely into Tam Rogic, a player who we've not been able to get a tune out of for a couple of years. You know, Lennon clearly couldn't get anything out of him and didn't use him to his best, certainly last season. Ange obviously knows him, has worked with him before. And that game at the weekend, I think, is a perfect example of what Tam could be. He's very much a squad player now, you know, and arguably he has been for a while, don't get me wrong. But he can be used. And again, it comes back to there's a player we've been linked with, which we're going to talk about later. But specific types of players, you know, different tools in the toolbox, if you like. Tom Rogic can do a job and we could possibly get more out of him. He's an asset that's just been sitting there to waste, really, Somani. Do you see a role for him now? Do you think the weekend showed us what the potential is for Tam under Postecoglou?
I mean, I thought Tam was fine on Sunday. You know, he was good. Fines, maybe. You know,
It's a bit shite.
But, you know, there was other players that stood out much more than him, and he scored a good goal, you know, and he had some nice touches and things like that. For me, though, I ain't about to kind of start writing about the resurrection of Tam Rogic, because you're right, he hasn't kicked his arse for us in years. And there are certain games, remember, this is Dundee at home. This is the sort of game you can play near bit on at centre half. It's the sort of game you can play Tam Rogic in midfield for us. So as much as it was nice and it was a good finish and, you know, some nice touches, and we know that when it comes to technical ability and that Tam's got that in spades, but that was nice, but let's not herald his return. Come on now.
Equating him to near Beaton, that is shady as fuck. He scored and was silky. Beaton would have lost us a couple of goals.
Beaton set up a goal in the first leg of our most recent European tie. Show a bit of respect, you.
Listen, we're all wearing flip-flops. I'm flip-flopping. I announced he was dead. He's back. He's back with a bang. We're going to move on to Cal McGregor. I know we're kind of going through a lot of the team, but there's just so many kind of talking points from this game. Lorenzo, McGregor, it's been talked about a bit, what kind of role McGregor should play in terms of, should he be playing as an 8, should he be playing as a 6? We saw him in that deep line kind of playmaker role, which he'd played previously under the Rat, which I thought was some of the best football that we played at that time. Was I think obviously Brown was out, but he went into that position and I think we all waxed lyrical about him at the time. I think so far this season, until this game at the weekend, from what I had been reading and seeing on social media and things, the opinion was that Cal McGregor shouldn't be playing there. He should be further forward because he gives you more in attack. And then all of a sudden he plays there, was phenomenal, I thought, at the weekend. And now the clamour is, oh, that's what he should play. He should be playing. And, you know, it does seem like one game has totally changed people's opinion on half of this team. Are you impressed enough to say that that's Cal McGregor's position for the rest of the season? Is that where you'd like to see him?
I think it's got a lot to do with the management and the style of play, because when McGregor was there, or McGregor was next to De Bruyne in general, you just felt like he wasn't involved enough further up the park. He felt like he wasn't getting to be as instrumental as he could be. But under Ange, when he's played in a slightly more advanced role, he's been great, because he's been back to kind of one-touch McGregor and he's been controlling the play. And as you said, when he goes to that more deep lying role, his quality's still there. He's still such a great center midfielder. And when we're going to dominate games, and again, under Ange, we've had huge amounts of possession. We haven't, against the weaker teams anyway, we haven't needed a Soro. We haven't needed a ball in a midfielder, you know, breaking up play and getting in passing lines, because they don't have the ball a lot. I think Dundee's passing stats were horrendous because of the press, not because of some wee ball winning midfielder in there, you know, taking legs out and stuff like that. So if you put McGregor there, he can 100% do the job. He can tackle. He's got a lot of dig. He's got an incredible engine. And what it does is frees up more opportunities for attacking players and quality footballers. And if you're just playing the numbers in a game where you're going to have 70% of the ball, you know, what would you rather have? A guy that's going to win, that's going to need to win maybe max 3 tackles a game, or 3 incredibly creative, talented midfielders in there? So for me, I'm curious about McCarthy, just because I'm curious to see what he's actually kind of like now. I haven't watched a lot of him. But yeah, I think particularly, I'll say in the games where we're going to dominate, which again should be most, and anything at Celtic Park, etc., I'd like to see McGregor there, because it just means more creativity on the park.
Yeah, Callum, like Lorenzo makes a great point about the fact that, you know, often we don't need to kind of sit and midfielders or anything like that, or even one with Sorrow being there as a kind of destroyer type. Do you think that Ange has kind of shown us that he has, he's more savvy, that he will adapt to each individual team that he's coming up against and change things? I mean, obviously not his overall approach and his philosophy, but certain key tactical things, he is going to adapt game by game rather than maybe what we've seen in the past of people being picked because they're always in the fucking team.
Yeah, I mean, it became a bit of a running joke last season how predictable some of the lineups were. It is refreshing to see a manager take things on very much a game-by-game basis and put out the best team and the best system to he thinks will win the game. And I agree with Lorenzo. I think that for a large number of domestic games, especially domestic home games, Callum McGregor will be absolutely fine in that sixth role, and it'll probably free up a space for a more attacking player going forward. Ultimately, I don't think it's his best position. I think Callum McGregor really suits it when he can go forward and, you know, make those darting runs, especially down that left channel, you know, linking up with Greg Taylor and whoever else is out there. And I think he can do real damage there. And I think he's shown that in flashes already this season. So long term, I don't think it's where he will play. I think especially with McCarthy coming in, I don't really see that happening for a lot of games apart from the odd domestic game where you can get away with it. I also don't really think that Callum McGregor looks great in these games, and almost every time he plays in that sort of six role in a, you know, domestic home game, he looks fantastic, and has done so for 2 or 3 years, and we always have this discussion, but it's the bigger games and European games and so on where I would worry about him in there. I know we've had some okay results with him in there before. I know we played in that six role against Leipzig when we beat them at home. But I think we've also seen the limitations of Kalmak as a six. And I think if you were to do it, you would really need runners and tacklers and beside him. And it then becomes something of a bit more of a workman-like midfield with him sort of pulling the strings at the base of it, but not being a traditional number six. But I don't see with the makeup of the squad that, you know, that being something that Ange goes to pretty regularly. But aye, more generally, it's nice to see from what we've seen so far that each game Ange seems to approach it as, you know, a one-off game, and, you know, very much sets his team out and his lineup out to, you know, go out and win that, which is a refreshing change certainly from last season.
So, Manny, last week when I was listening to you, I nearly spat out my pina colada because you were so positive about James McCarthy coming in. I didn't really expect it. Do you think James McCarthy will take up that role? Also, what have you thought about Cal McGregor's start to the season and also his role as captain? Because you did mention at the start about him getting all the players together at the end. Has he impressed you?
To answer the first point, McCarthy's a more traditional six. So in certain games where you probably want to give the back four more protection, where you're going to get more coming back at you than, say, against Dundee, assuming McCarthy's fully fit, I would have him there. I think Kalmak does look good in games like Dundee. Totally agree with, I'm not going to repeat what Callum and Lorenzo said, but I totally agree with that. In games like that, I think you can see him there. But when there is a requirement for a more traditional number six, I would be less confident of him being in there. McCarthy is somebody who I think, and I said it previously, will really benefit Callum McGregor. He'll give him support because two things about McGregor. I was a wee bit concerned about him in his temperament, or not his temperament, his kind of personality in terms of being a captain. But what I think sometimes you see with McGregor is he rises to the players around him, if you will. And when he's got all that pressure on his shoulders, I think if you've got somebody like McCarthy with the experience next to him, then that will really bring him on. So that one of the reasons why I'm excited to see him in there. I'm impressed with him doing the traditional captain stuff, if you will, because, you know, we know he's a good player, and when he performs, he's a good player. But we in Scotland, certainly maybe British football, they'll talk about captains and have the importance on it. And a lot of the time, that's just being visibly, you know, G'ing the players up, doing things like the huddle, bringing them back round. We'll hear he's been texting the players. You know, these are the things that we look for. And he stepped into that and he's really kind of taken that on his shoulders. And I was worried that he was maybe not loud enough or whatever to do that going forward. But the one way that Callum McGregor will be a captain for this side is by performing like he did on Sunday. And I think when we've got the right system and quality players around him, he'll shine. He definitely will.
One other player that a lot of people have came out with some pretty hot takes about, to be honest with you, is Anthony Ralston. He obviously scored, and it was a great finish. It was a wee bit unorthodox, you know what I mean? He's obviously a right back, and he's found himself doing keepy up. He's in the 6 yard box. Is Anthony Ralston, I'm going to very quickly go around everybody, has Anthony Ralston done enough? Now, I'm not going to be stupid here, right? Has he done enough to be the second choice right back? If we go and sign a first choice right back to come in, would you be happy with Anthony Ralston being the backup and maybe playing 10 to 15 games this season, Lorenzo?
I don't think so, but I think he's done enough that I don't mind him being a Celtic player. I think he's, you know, he's clearly been...
As long as he doesn't play.
He's clearly improved. I mean, he's clearly a hard worker. He's clearly, I think when you've got somebody like Ange coming in that has a system, wants you to play a certain way, puts trust in players, he's clearly a good learner. He's clearly probably a good trainer. And you can't argue, he's improved and he's had a few good games in a row. So, and I think Ange talks about, he's got the shirt, you know, he's got the shirt, it's his to lose. So no, I don't think he's anywhere near good enough. But third choice, hey, you know, maybe he's there.
Callum, can you take the high vis off and put his steel toe caps away?
I've been really impressed by Anthony Ralston in recent weeks. Coming around to the idea of him as backups, maybe not the worst thing. Maybe in another window where you're not having to rebuild half your squad, you know, that is an area that you begin to look at. But this is Celtic having to bring in an unprecedented amount of players, and also Celtic in the transfer window, who we know are notoriously slow. So you do make those compromises throughout the window. And what I like about Anthony Ralston is he tries to play that, you know, we all know he's a bit of a limited player, and I'm sure he knows he's not, you know, the most silky technical player. But he goes out there and he really tries to play the game in the right way, in the way that Ange wants him to. And, you know, a lot of footballers, and you can maybe look to your fullback on the other side, when they know that they're a bit of a limited player, will take the easier option or pass the buck, you know, or play that simple, you know, pass inside and move it on and keep it moving and not quite hide a little bit. But Anthony Ralston, to be fair to him, each week he'll go out there and it doesn't really matter who he's playing against. He'll go try stand his man up on the wing and get to the byline. You know, he'll keep drifting inside the way that Ange wants him to help build the play. And I'm sure these are all areas that he's maybe not the most comfortable in, but he keeps doing it and he keeps, you know, fully committing to that. And I think after a season last year where we saw such a lack of commitment, not necessarily a lack of effort, a real lack of commitment and a real lack of, you know, commitment to a game plan also. It's really refreshing to see players there that we've probably all written off that, you know, actually if you give them the right instruction, whatever, they might not be world beaters, but they go out there and they look, you know, generally quite competent. And so far, Anthony Ralston has looked very, very competent. And he's came up with two great goals. Also, I don't think he could have done much more. I think if he doesn't end up being second choice right back for this season, it'll be through no fault of his own.
Yeah, he kind of shows that Postecoglou could possibly get something greater than the sum of the parts, you know, rather than being a Neil Lennon type who relies on individual brilliance to get him through. So, Manny, do you want to, before we move on to the European stuff, do you want to just sum up your kind of overall thoughts and feelings and emotions after such a kind of big win? What did it do for you?
Excited me. It made me enjoy watching Celtic again. And I haven't said that for ages. I think I said that earlier on. But, you know, I don't want to get carried away. I really don't, because we're desperate. We're absolutely desperate for this, for everything to be great again, because last season was so bad. Sunday showed us real signs of it, but what? I'm just hesitant to jump in with 2 feet and say, here we go, one in a row, just yet. But my God, it's hard because...
Give it an hard week.
Give it an hard week. Give it after Thursday. In fact, if we win on Sunday, emergency pod, I'm coming on and declaring all sorts. But no, it just made me enjoy watching Celtic again. And for me right now, that's massive. And I'm sure I'm not alone when I say that.
Yeah, it's another big week, as Gal has said on the agenda for the last like 6 weeks. We are playing in the Europa League. Obviously, we've got the second leg of the game against Jablonec on Thursday night. It's going to be the first game with hopefully a full house, full capacity. I actually bought two tickets today to take the good lady, so I'm looking forward to it. That try to buy tickets on the fucking website, it's awful, man. I was trying to do it on my phone, and what a disaster. I was there for about half an hour trying to get two seats together. But I'm really looking forward to it. Lorenzo, what's your kind of feelings going into it after the first game? Obviously, we won 4-2, but it was a wee bit erratic, especially towards the end with near Beaton's own goal, I'm going to say. And then, obviously, Ryan Christie getting another one in the 90th minute odd. Where are you at with it? Do you think it's done, or have we still got a bit of work to do on Thursday night?
I think it's done, but I think Angelo approach it as an opportunity to lay down another marker and score more goals. I think you have to keep the momentum up, and even just looking at the fixtures we have up until the Huns game, there's goals in those games for us, and a few of them are at home, and there's a real chance to build momentum. I think we were a wee bit off it now and then in the first leg, and there were some of the play was a wee bit slack, but in general, to look that comfortable, have that much of the ball, you know, that many chances, score that many goals away from home in Europe is just all positives. And the negatives were the negatives we knew were coming. The terrifying defence. Joe Hart looked a wee bit rusty, made some bad decisions in those goals. But, I mean, the centre-halves were awful. Taylor got beat several times by, you know, this random guy for Jablonec. And, you know, the problems were the same problems we know, the problems that can only get solved in the transfer window. So everything else about it I was pretty comfortable with, and I think we've got a comfortable, exciting game to come on Thursday.
Callum, you know, obviously near Beaton was the culprit for one goal, you know, the own goal. He was obviously out the team at the weekend. Do you think that Welsh coming in, being the partner to Starfelt, I think we would all ideally like to sign in our centre-half to partner Starfelt, and the jury's maybe still out on him, and I don't think anybody's going to judge him quite yet. But do you think Welsh should be the one that comes in and, you know, partners him now?
Yeah, I think for the time being, purely because, I mean, I know Ange will probably want near Beaton in there because he can. He's a decent passer of the ball and he can probably play out from the back a little bit better than Stephen Welsh can, although Stephen Welsh did fantastically well for the third goal at the weekend. But for me, he doesn't have that defensive instinct that if the ball goes in behind him over his head, that he needs to turn, you know, he needs to turn immediately. It almost seems like a delayed reaction. I think it was their second goal at Jablonec the other week. And Starfelt get shown up a wee bit, but it comes down near Beaton's side and it's a ball clipped in behind him. And I can only imagine that Starfelt is over there on this, you know, covering on the opposite side because he's covering for near Beaton, who far too often just gets caught, you know, too straight onto the ball, too flat, too easily done by, you know, something floated over the top of him or floated, you know, or, you know, pinged down the channel as we saw against Midtjylland. You know, you can, you know, we've said for years, you know, you can get away with them in games against the likes of Dundee at home, but I don't even want to see that near Beaton anymore. He's made too many mistakes too many times, and I would much rather see us try develop Stephen Welsh, who might not be a starting centre-half for Celtic in the long run, but I've no doubt that he's got enough quality to be, you know, a more than capable squad player. So one of the real plus points about bringing in Ange when we got to learn a bit about him was, you know, his emphasis on developing players and youth players. And for me, you know, this sort of dilemma is the perfect opportunity for him to try develop a player in Stephen Welsh rather than somebody who's, you know, 28, 29 on his second or third contract and hopefully won't be here in a season or two's time.
So, Manny, how did you see the first leg? And do you think that he'll make any changes to the team that played against Dundee? Obviously, there was changes in that. Like Cesaro played against Shablite but didn't play the weekend. You think he'll keep the Dundee team? And how does that change your thoughts on possibly the tie overall? You know what I mean? I think if the weekend had been different, we maybe would feel different about Thursday, if that makes sense.
No, I think I don't think he'll keep the same team. I think he's aware of the fixture backlog we've got in August, and he's going to need to keep the team fresh. You know, I mean, you might see Roderick come out for Sorrow or you know, Abada for Forrest. I don't know what team he's going to play, but I do think he'll make changes, and I don't think that's a bad thing. The first leg, you know, overall we scored 4 goals away from home. Let's concentrate on the positive. And I think Thursday's a real opportunity to keep the feel good factor going forward. So I think whatever side he puts in the park, I think it will be slightly different from the Dundee game, but no pressure. But I'm expecting a similar performance to the one that we had on Sunday. So I'm really looking forward to it. This week's going slow. I mean, when's that ever been the case in recent history when you're watching Celtic? I just wish it was Thursday so that I could see his play again. So I'm fairly confident that we could add goals to the 4 we've already got. So bring it on.
Yeah, no, I'm absolutely the same. We'll try and pick a team if we can. Firstly, I just want to point to a stat that the stat man, Chris Gallagher, sent to us at the start. He said that Joe Hart, this is from the Cynic analysis, which you can obviously find on Twitter. Joe Hart completed 44 and 42 passes against Dundee and Jablonec respectively. That's the two highest totals Instat I've ever recorded for him. And the data is it's over 367 matches going back to 2011. So clearly you can see that he's being asked to obviously play out from the back and basically give the ball to the likes of Cal McGregor, who was coming very deep against Dundee, being that person to take it in that deep line position or one of the centre halves. But, you know, there's going to be times, like all goalkeepers, that probably haven't been brought up with that style of play, that they're going to make mistakes, but at least it shows that he's trying to adapt to what the manager wants. There's no doubt that Joe Hart's going to be the goalkeeper, so let's go with the defence. Ralston has to play right back because we don't have any other right backs. Centre half, send some money. Who would be your two players for centre half?
Welsh and Starfelt. I'm the same as Callum when it comes to Near Beaton. I think we could probably get away with playing him there in that game, but he's done for me. He's one of the players who I'd rather just wasn't at the club now. You know, he seems as if he's part of a bygone era, if you will. And there's a few other players that are in that, but you might be able to get a wee tune out of them. But Beaton's certainly somebody that you just wish he wasn't an option. You know, that every time we go into these qualifiers, we end up with him. You just wish that wasn't an option. So for me, it's got to be Welsh with Starfelt.
Any objections to that, Lorenzo, Callum?
None.
Nope. Absolutely none. Greg Taylor obviously is going to be left back. Adam Montgomery came on at the weekend, didn't he? And I'm not suggesting that he would start, but clearly shows that he's currently the second choice left back because ball and goalie, I don't think he's going to play again, to be honest. Okay, so the midfield three, Cal McGregor obviously is going to play. Do we see Sorrow in there, Turnbull in there, Christie coming back into the midfield? Lorenzo, who would you go for the midfield three?
I assume Sorrow will play. I don't mind. I don't think there's any combination I'd be that worried about or upset about. I think there's goals in this game regardless. Again, because of the fixture backlog, maybe you want Sorrow in so that one of your creative players gets a wee break or comes on at halftime or something. But Rogic, maybe, so he can get 2 games in the bounce and we see if he's actually back. You know, might be nice. But I think Rogic benefited from the nature of that Celtic Park 70% possession. He can be a bit of a luxury in games like that. So this might be one of those games. So maybe Rogic twice, I'd like to see maybe, but nothing else would really worry me. So maybe let's go. In fact, give me the exact same. Just give me the exact. I want goals. Give me 10-0 against Jablonec. So I'll go the exact same lineup.
I would, just on Sorrow, I really wanted him to be great. You know, I bought into the whole N'Golo Kante thing. He's rash as anything, though. I mean, it was only a couple of weeks ago, I think everybody was saying Turnbull is not a starter, Sorrow is not a starter. Okay, fair enough. People have maybe had their heads turned with Turnbull and how he played at the weekend, but Sorrow for me is just too ill-disciplined in that, you know, off the ball. He's all right on the ball, and we've seen him being able to play some nice passes to break the lines and things like that, but he just looks like a kind of rabbit caught in the headlights sometimes, and he's always going to pick up a card as well, which, you know, I don't think is a good thing in Europe. I would like to see Callum McGregor, Turnbull and Rogic again. I know you're not going to get the full game out of Tam, but I think at Celtic Park, with the momentum from the weekend, I think the crowd are going to be, you know, it's going to be an incredible atmosphere. I think we go for it and try and have this game killed off in the first 40, 45 minutes. And Tam could be the man. I'm just waiting for some man to slap me down, back down to earth. Callum, your midfield three?
I wasn't going to say it, but I think Lorenzo's convinced me. I wouldn't actually mind seeing the same midfield three again. I think part of that is also we recognise that Jablonets aren't a particularly brilliant side. And at home, against what we saw last week, you think that we should have more than enough between Turnbull, Rogic and McGregor to, you know, control that midfield. But it would maybe also, you know, set off some small alarm bells if Ange is willing to go so sort of gung-ho. And what still is a tie that's definitely not over. So I'd imagine he'll probably bring Sorrow back in, bit of solidity in there, and, you know, hopefully, you know, kill the game off pretty early doors.
So that leaves us with the front three. Do we go with the same as the weekend? I mean, Ryan Christie, I suppose, on the left, he can't disrupt that. He's playing too well, I would think. So I would go with Christie. Obviously, Furuhashi's going to play, and I would play Abada. I can't see Abada would have to have a really bad game, I think, to then bring in Forrest again. And I know Forrest has got the experience, especially in European ties. I don't think that's going to be, you know, if the game was maybe more finely balanced, if it had been a draw in the first game, I could see the sense in it. But I think for the boys' confidence, you continue with them. So I would go with the same Christie, Furuhashi, Abada, Forrest on the bench. So, Manny, yourself?
I wouldn't have any problem with that, but I genuinely don't think we should be precious about who makes up the cogs of the team, because I do think he's going to switch it up, and I don't think that would be a case of saying to Abada, you're coming out for this reason. I think it's just, you'll get your games, so will Forrest get his games, and, you know, I think you'll find Furuhashi at times will maybe play on the left. You know, there might be some games where, you know, they don't start him, because there'll be games where you're already starting to think in your head, let's maybe not risk Furuhashi for some game because you want him for the big games, you know. So I genuinely think this is going to be a massive squad effort. I wouldn't be bothered. See if we went with the same front three and Thursday, bring that on, because you've seen the movement, you've seen the way they work together, and that would excite me. But I'm no too precious about it, because I think we'll see changes over the course of the season.
Lorenzo, Callum, any changes to what I said? Would anybody put Forrest in there?
I'd just roll with it, because again, you're also forgetting, you know, first game back with 60,000 in the ground. I think he's going to want that just as bouncing as possible, and this is the team that would excite people the most, and maybe there's something to be said for prioritising that, because the tie, you know, is very much in our hands, and I don't think they look much better than Dundee, if they are better than Dundee, to be honest. So I think we should be kind of going for an exciting, galvanising, big goal-scoring game on Thursday, just to, again, keep this momentum absolutely rolling, because we don't have long. I mean, we've got a cup game next, which is as important as it gets against a team that's already beat us. We've got that coming up. And then we've got the Huns game still, what, 2 weeks away or something? Just 3 weeks away? So get the positivity rolling, I think.
Give the people what they want, Kel.
I mean, it's a really boring answer, but see, for the sake of fitness, I'd like to see James Forrest get some more minutes in the legs. I mean, that chance that he missed away in Michelin, I have no doubt that, you know, James Forrest mid-season probably buries that, no problem. And I thought, you know, there were some signs last week away at Jablonets that you were starting to see bits of the old James Forrest. So I just like to keep that momentum up. You know, Abada's fine at the minute. I've got no qualms about, you know, dropping him out for a game and then bringing him back in. But I'd like to have the option of a fit and flying James Forrest, especially with, you know, the games that Lorenzo mentioned coming up, you know, potentially Alkmaar, Rangers, cup game, so on. and you also want to kick on in the league, you want two right wingers at least that are, you know, both vying for that position. And I think James Forrest had a sort of stuttering start due to missing out on you know, a large chunk of pre-season. So for purely fitness reasons, I wouldn't mind seeing James in there on Thursday.
Very, very quickly before we've got another couple of things to talk about before we wrap up. Very quick prediction. We'll start with you, Samani.
4-0 Celtic.
Lovely. Lorenzo?
5-0 Celtic.
Oh, Callum?
You go 6-0 Celtic, don't
I? Well, you know what? I'm going to have to go fucking 8-0. 8-0 Celtic. It's going to be an embarrassment.
You're right, Celtic does.
Absolutely. Right, so we're going to get to a bit of transfer news. There's not really much transfer news, to be honest with you. Ange spoke after the game against Dundee and said that he hopes to have another couple of players in this week. We're obviously recording this Tuesday night. There has been no players came in, no real concrete, like there's no one arriving or anything imminent as far as we know. It did come out last night, 10:30, Barry done as usual and put in the tabloid link, which is delightful in the group chat. Thomas Henry, I'm going to call him because he's French, playing in Belgium. He seems to be a very typical, in terms of physicality, big man up front. I think there's obviously been a scouting report done by the Cynic Analysis, so you can go and check that out, covering all his stats and all his kind of attributes and things. I don't know if anybody's actually seen him and can talk much about him, but in terms of, again, being a player that can fit a specific role, I mean, obviously he's going to be completely different to the likes of Kyogo. Probably a player, the type of big man role we don't currently have in the squad. So, Manny, is it, I mean, £7 million is what's being muted, and I think there's a lot of other clubs interested in him. Although we might not know a lot about him, do you think that's the type of signing that we should be going for? Someone that can be totally different in that sort of position to what we have?
Yeah, I think it's important to be adaptable, because we're looking, I mean, even in our most recent years, we had best success under the rat. You know, there was some times where you were talking about being more pragmatic or maybe changing it up a bit. Certainly, in some times when we went into European games and we were playing the same style and not adapting to our opposition, that drew criticism, and rightfully so. If we're going for a guy like Henry, and the size, you know, he's 6'4" and he's obviously good in the air. We're talking earlier on about the likes of Abada and his ability to put balls into the box. You know, you want somebody there who's going to be able to do that, who's going to be able to rough up centre halves on occasion when we need that, or even sometimes just a plan B, you know, to launch it up to him. As much as that, after we witnessed that silky soccer on Sunday, that sounds a wee bit kind of, you know, what's the word I'm looking for? Reductionist, archaic or whatever, yeah. Sometimes you just need that. Sometimes you're going to need to get an 88th minute goal for big Henry knocking it down for Furuhashi. So when I seen us going for that, I thought that maybe shows a sign of pragmatism and an understanding from Ange that he's going to have to maybe he was not going to have to abandon his principles, but he might have to change them up at certain times in certain games. So I was pleased to see him linked with a player of that style, shall we say.
Lorenzo, the right back Buta that we're looking at, I think he's Portuguese. He's apparently signing for Everton, so it looks like we've missed out on him. Are you starting to get a wee bit worried that the defensive reinforcements aren't quite coming anytime soon? I mean, obviously a game 1-6-0 with all the attacking flair that we have, it takes the focus away from the defence, but we can't lose sight of the fact we're fucking light and we desperately need some starters.
Yeah, we do everything on the cheap, which means we do everything slow, and which means we're always ready to be overtaken in any transfer. You know, and when all these things are made public as well, you're always going to get either prices hiked up or you're going to get gazumped by a team if you take this long to do your business. So I'm worried, because we've shown the worst of it from Celtic was the search for a manager, how bad we are at having a a plan B or even a second option, let alone a plan B. So if we're tracking this guy, who knows how much of us have been tracking them, how much can we trust paper reports? But, you know, if he's gone now, is the next option as good as him, or is it now a drop down to somebody worse? Is it somebody cheap? Because that's the worry, because if we get another stopgap in this defence that we don't think can genuinely walk into it and be head and shoulders above what we've got, it's a waste of time. It's a waste of money. You're better just going out and spending on somebody that, I know it's a way bigger deal. It's way more money, but I always think, when I think about the stuff of Liverpool, when they signed Alisson and Van Dijk, they were a team that were missing two really obvious pieces, and it was meaning they weren't getting where they wanted to be. They weren't qualifying for what they need to qualify for, and they were lacking. They were never going to win the league. So they went and spent, you know, said they could spend the equivalent. They went and spent what they had to spend on a striker, on a centre-half and a keeper, and they suddenly were the best team in Europe for a while. And Celtic just don't seem to have that attitude where they go, you know, there's nothing more obvious in the world right now than Celtic need a right-back and a centre-half. There's nothing more obvious in that team, but we won't just go and take the money and solve it. And then it's done. It could be done for two seasons. It could be done, you know, you could save yourself a ton of money. We just seem to be desperate to uncover gems out of sheer luck more than anything. Because when we scout these great players and we hear about all these guys we get linked with year after year and we never pay up for them, and then suddenly they're at a big team a couple of years later, like Castagne, Brendan, having him at Leicester. Now, that's a guy we were linked with for years. We never paid up for him. And it just looks like it might just happen again.
Yep. Lorenzo, just a wee note, make sure you call him the rat next time.
Apologies.
Callum, you know, if you're going to believe Ange that we're going to have two players coming in, what would be your preference in terms of positions? Obviously, Lorenzo's saying there, right back, centre half, we're being linked with this striker. What would, if you could have two filled tomorrow, what positions would it be?
I mean, right back and centre half's the sensible. The sensible, unsexy answer that, you know, nobody gets really excited about. I mean, I found myself watching videos of that Henri boy last night and getting really, really excited because, you know, all the cliches, good touch for a big fella and all that, but he was looked really, really impressive, sort of Chris Sutton-esque, but that's not really what we need right now. We do need reinforcements at the back. I don't think we can persist with Stephen Welsh for a full season or even until Julian comes back. I think we need some better quality in there, and I don't think it's fair to put either Anthony Ralston, who I know is a little bit older, or Stephen Welsh in that position, you know, in such high pressure games that, you know, they're required to start every week, especially when you're looking to develop these players. So I think that, you know, it's really obvious and it's a really boring answer, but, you know, centre half and right back we're absolutely crying out for. And after that, maybe even a left back as well, because I don't fancy going through the. I don't think Greg Taylor's good enough to be a starting left back for Celtic. And if he gets injured, what have we got? Adam Montgomery, by the looks of it, because Ballingolly's nowhere to be seen. So after that, I think left back then becomes a priority as well.
I would actually argue that I'd rather go with Welsh in the middle than not replace either of the fullbacks. I actually think I'd see left back's more of a problem by position than right back just now. I think Greg Taylor is woefully short of what we need. So is Anthony Ralston, but at least you get endeavour from Anthony Ralston, and he's a bit of a goal scorer in the last couple of weeks. But I genuinely think the fullback positions, especially, they've got to be key to what Postecoglou wants to do.
And you want balance as well. You don't want a good player on the right but a shite player on the left, because we've seen that.
So, exactly. And when you look back and you think that at one point we had Tierney and Lustig. Now, okay, maybe Lustig was... certainly the first season they played together, that was it. You knew they were playing and you knew that they would perform. And we've regressed to the fact right now we've got Taylor and Ralston. I think they're both, let's be fair to both of them, they're equally in need of surgery just now. I would probably say we'd need to get them in before a centre half, though I definitely agree. I think we really need a bit more quality in there as well. But I'm greedy. I want a striker as well.
I know you.
5-6 I want in. Come on.
Listen, it's been an incredibly positive podcast tonight, which has been great. It's great to actually talk about the football and not an absolute shambles behind the scenes. However, we've got another few minutes left. Gordon Strachan is joining the club in a advisory role, a consultancy role, for 3 months to look at the youth structure, the women's team, and the he's obviously looking at the B team. He's also going to be working for Dundee as their technical director at the time, because that's his role that he's been in for any time he's not on Celtic TV. What the fuck's going on with this?
It smacks of fucking stupidity. Jobs for the boys. There's about 42 different members of his family employed by the club just now, and I couldn't tell you what any of them bring. His boy's a scout. Who's he scouted? His boy's got an iPad. That's it. Now he's come in, basically. He's still employed by Dundee. Right, Gordon, we need you to come in and do something. Aye, I'll take a look at the youth academy. Want me to do the women's team or not? I mean, it just smacks of absolute shite. And this club have a knack when you are on a high, when you are looking at the positives, when you are thinking, here we go, we're back on track, this is phenomenal, to just dump a big jobby right in front of you. I don't see what the guy brings. His footballing, you know, people will talk about the caliber of, you know, his career and what he's done in the game and all that sort of stuff. He's a dinosaur, man. He is a total dinosaur. And I just don't, I don't get it. The only bright spark was they said it was 3 months, right? But Nick Hammond was 3 months, was he not? And look what happened there. And they eventually get shot at him. I don't see the point of it. It just sounds, it just smacks of jobs for the boys. And quite frankly, it kind of ruined my good mood about Celtic today.
Yeah, I mean, Lorenzo, there's, you know, that, as Somani says, people say that, oh, well, he's an experienced head and he's done a lot in the game and things like that. It very much smacks of Dermot Desmond playing politics and wanting somebody of his own in there to... He obviously is aware that Don McKay is trying to change things, but he wants someone else in there to keep an eye on him, I think. And, you know, is it so difficult to ask for somebody to be appointed to a position, any position, having gone through a rigorous interview process, having applied for the job, being up against other candidates? I mean, it just feels like it's one step forward, two steps back, doesn't it?
I mean, Celtic board can't help it if three guys apply for every job they post. It's just, that's what we're dealing with. We've got Lee Griffiths and Strachan, you know, we can put them in any role, it seems. But I think it's maybe a case of Dom, maybe, because we've had a lot of clamour for this maybe more German style of having a footballing operations team and then a coaching staff completely separate. And maybe Dom has wanted to look like he's making inroads into that by having an overseer or some sort of consultant or whatever. But instead of going and maybe getting somebody with massive experience in Germany or in one of these countries that operates like this, yeah, I think it's Desmond picking his pal and going, right, well, you can do that, but it's got to be Gordon. Because there's no other justification. I mean, he's got no, particularly for stuff like the fact that he even had to write in that statement that he's helping with the women's team. I mean, what Gordon Strachan could possibly know about the SWPL is beyond me, and the limitations of it and where it needs to improve. He doesn't have any experience there, so that's a wasted job title. So a job title that this whole job, actually, this whole consultant idea, it's not a crazy idea, but we do need somebody in there permanent. And that's the worrying thing, that it will end up being Strachan. Or maybe Strachan's got another son that might end up being.
You never know.
I mean, Callum. Sorry, on you go, Callum. Sorry. I've got plenty to say about this, but you go first, mate.
What an incredibly talented family the Strachan family are. No, I can only echo what's been said. It's incredibly frustrating that it very much sort of killed the good feeling around the club stone dead this afternoon. And the club are just terrible for that right now. You know, it seems like every time they're even gifted the opportunity of a win in the fans' eyes, PR-wise, whether it's, you know, the first game back in and they go charge 20-odd quid for it or whatever the price of it was, or this. There's easy PR wins that you just don't need to do, and the optics of it are really bad also. I don't think it looks particularly good for Don McKay, who said in his first press conference, you know, Gordon Strachan, no, will not be coming in as director of football, only to then turn around, you know, a couple of months later and said, but he's actually getting appointed as technical director. It makes him look like a sort of sleazy politician. being very clever in what he says, but you know that's not a particularly good way to, you know, for a man who came in with this great fanfare of how he was going to engage with the fans, one of your first acts can't be seen to be, you know, either lying to them or sort of playing fast and loose with the truth. So I don't think it looks very good for Don McKay. I don't think Gordon Strachan has much to contribute to a modern football club. I saw somebody posted an interview that he'd done earlier this year or last year with the Dundee Courier about his job at Dundee, and you know, he makes some interesting points about, you know, developing players that can, you know, hold the ball in and take a man on and in all areas of the park. But then you scroll down a wee bit more and he goes off on a big rant about kids and their iPads these days, and they've not got the attention span to watch a full game of football, and they're more interested in the nutmegs and the goal highlights and all. Just a load of nonsense, as if kids don't like football. So no, he is a dinosaur. Would rather he wasn't anywhere near the football club, but I guess the only silver lining is that for now it seems to only be a temporary measure.
Yeah. So Manny, I know you want to say a bit more, but I'm not going to let you, because it's going to get too negative and we've already ran over. Listen, we're all upbeat, we're all up for it. We've had a massive result at the weekend, which is hopefully we're going to build on this week on Thursday and then into the game at the weekend, which we didn't even get to talk about. But listen, this has been great. I've loved it. Great to be so positive again. So, Manny?
Perfect strang. Yeah, it's been tremendous. For fuck's sake. I had to get my neb in. I mean, it's...
Thanks.
Just, no, in fact, I'm taking liberties here, wee man, right? Okay.
Wish your screen would freeze again.
That bit, see the bit when I read at the end that he's going to look into Celtic B and he's going to look into the women. These are teams building their own identity and they're bringing this all diddy. I mean, he thinks he's down with the kids the way he dresses and all that shit. Get him out. Get him chased. Thanks, Louis. It's been a pleasure. Cheers.
Thanks. Lorenzo, it's been a pleasure, my man.
No, I've really enjoyed it, and I'm very positive and very good week to be a Celtic fan for a change.
Callum, looking forward to Thursday. It's been a pleasure.
I can't wait. Thanks a lot for having me. And just hoping it's another good week for Celtic.
Absolutely. This has been the Cynic Weekly, and we will speak to you down the road.